Welcome to the Adonis Lifestyle Podcast. I'm John Barbin, and with me is Phil Shabazz. Am I saying
Shabazz.
That right? Oh, Shabazz. Okay,
yeah.
Get it right. And Phil won our transformation contest this time around, raised the bar again. If you're listening on iTunes, go over to AdonisIndex.com and check out his pictures. I think you'll be just as impressed as I am. And all right, so let's just jump right into this. Let's start with your history, and I have a bit of a template this time around, so I'm just going to see how this works. But we'll just go wherever we go with it.
Yeah.
So let's just start off with your workout history and what you've tried before you arrived at us.
Yeah, absolutely. The first time I ever lifted a weight was the day after graduation in high school. I was a three-sport athlete in high school. Was never very good to start with, but I just sort of have the hard work gene. Got better, but for whatever reason, in high school, they didn't make us lift weights. And so I asked my parents for a weight set for graduation, and they got me one of those cement weight sets, and I jumped into it and started lifting just right after I graduated high school. And literally, John, I've been doing the exact same thing I learned when I was 17 and graduated high school until I found AI.
How old are you right now?
I'm 37.
So for like 20 years, you've been doing the same workout?
That's it. That's the way it works. And it's funny, too, because when you go into the gym, you can sort of tell the like when a person came of age, when they started lifting weights, literally by just what they wear. You know, you've got the do-rag guy who you could tell just started lifting in the 80s, and then you've got the MMA guys that started lifting. You know, like you can just tell. And for me, like, yeah, that's when I started. That's what I learned, and I've been doing the same type of stuff. It wasn't until I didn't know that you could do more for your biceps than just a curl or like a, you know, I didn't know. Like I just had no clue. And so I just learned what I learned when I was 17, and any time I'd hit the weights, I'd just do the same stuff.
Right. And so you're not a fitness information consumer,
no.
So to speak. You never really cared. You just went to the gym and just did your thing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's really like if you go to the gym and you're looking around, and I've been sort of hypersensitive after I found AI, going into the gym and just seeing people doing what they're doing, and you can't tell if somebody has a goal in mind. You just come in, you see them do the exact same things that they were doing the week before. And over the course of time, and since I've been in the gym consistently the past year, you see people looking the same, doing the same things, pounding protein shakes and like mixing powder. I mean, it's like it's the same stuff over and over again for people, and I was that guy. And I don't look down on those guys. They're doing what they think is right for themselves. They're doing what they learned to do. I was doing what I learned to do. I thought I was doing the best that I could, and I thought I was doing it right because that's what I learned. I didn't know any different until I found AI, and that's the important thing. And so basically, I would lift on and off, you know, through college especially, I lifted a lot. And then coming into, you know, I got married in 2000, and then that year I lifted a lot, and then just career went crazy. And so I sort of have not lifted consistently since 2000. I've just been in and out, would run every now and then, that kind of thing, but that was it. And I've been in my career up until about 2000, beginning of 2006, was mainly I was in higher education in the student affairs division. I was the director of student success, both at like at a Cal State University in the university system and over in the private side as well. And, you know, you come from higher ed as well. It can really carry you away and just take your life away, and you can just get involved. And you keep, I know I kept a college sort of schedule because I'm working with students all the time. And so I'm with students. I'm keeping this college schedule. And next thing I know, I'm starting to gain weight. I mean, I'm 6 foot, and I'm now looking back, I know that I was probably somewhere between 180 and 190 up until about 2005, 2006. Now, what happened in 2006 was that I decided that it was time. My wife and I decided it was time to move away from higher ed. We wanted to sort of find a new direction, and it just taken too much of life away. And what happened was in 2006, my wife got pregnant with quadruplets.
Wow.
Four babies. And I remember just being at the doctor's office, and we knew going in that there was going to be more than one. We thought twins. Mm-hmm. And she goes, "How would you feel if you had more than two?" And we're like, "Triplets, really?" And she said, "More than three." And I was like, "What?" And immediately we thought, I just had this sense, like, that's it, life is over. I mean, life is done. And it was a hard conversation. What's that?
Yeah, okay. I was just going to say, I hope the kids don't listen to this podcast when you said that.
No. It's going to get better.
It gets better. Okay.
And here's why. Because, like, immediately the doctor was like, you're going to have to consider, a reduction, which is aborting one or two of the babies in order to make this happen. The fourth baby's half the size of the others, probably going to die at the end of the first trimester. You probably want it to die before the end of the first trimester in order to save this pregnancy. No doctor is going to consider taking you on unless you consider. I mean, we were just hammered with
massive stress.
It was incredible. It was unbelievable. And what happened was my wife and I, we just came together, supported one another. Sort of nicknamed that fourth baby Little Man, and just sort of started to pray for Little Man, and Little Man sort of caught up, started to catch up, and then about 18 weeks we visited the doctor, and the doctor was like, listen, you're about to lose this pregnancy. And she was basically, about to give birth. She was not doing well. And what happened was, is he said, you've got three options. Either you go straight to the hospital, and you go on immediate bed rest, you go home and see what happens, but you will lose this pregnancy, or you can just abort and start over. And that night, and we were at the doctor's office like at midnight, John, we went straight to Santa Monica, UCLA, and my wife started a 3-month bed rest with her rear end elevated above her head. She just laid in a bed and just used the commode, and she saved those kids' lives. She saved their lives. And then they were born on March 28, 2007, and they were in NICU for 2 months. My wife and I traveled back and forth to Santa Monica. They all came home at different times, and that was it. Life had changed. For the next year, I didn't even hold a job. We just sort of took care of the kids in shifts. Like, I would do the night shift from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. With like volunteers, and she would do the day shift and with volunteers, and that was just life for almost a year. Until the kids started sleeping like through the night, and then it subsided. We still needed some help, and things started to get a little bit better about the time the kids were about 2 years old, but I didn't hold a job during that time. And also in 2005, when things were tough in higher ed, I said, I'd lost a little bit of myself. I want to go back and do some things that I just love to do. And one of the things, I graduated with a communications degree as well as a theater arts degree. And I decided I wanted to take an on-camera class in Hollywood, just for fun. Mm-hmm. That turned into a scene study. The scene study turned into headshots. Headshots turned into an agent. Next thing you know, I booked my first co-star on a primetime TV show. Nice. And all of a sudden, I started this acting career as well. Now, when we were taking care of the kids during that year, when I was just stuck at home, that's when the economy crashed. 2008 was the economy. And when I sort of came out and that year was over, there was no acting work because the writer's strike had killed Hollywood for a year. Mm-hmm. There weren't any jobs anywhere. I picked up doing real estate to sort of help out as well, and there was no real estate. Nobody was buying a house in 2008. Mm-hmm. And that was it. I didn't know what happened. It was like coming out and seeing the sun for the first time, and there was nothing out there. It was just a desert. And slowly, I was able to pick up another job. I started working at a church in the area, sort of larger church in Los Angeles, and sort of larger churches have a lot of different sort of pastors in different positions. And so I picked up the job as pastor of community life. And so I'm sort of the guy who does the announcements in church. So I'll stand in front of church, in front of a congregation of about 1,200 people, 400 at a time, and I'll do announcements. I'm the guy who plans the big events like the car show for the church or the picnic and that kind of thing. I work with like the first time guests. I'm still doing the real estate. I do the real estate as well. I still do the acting, and then I still consult for higher education. So I'll go to universities and I'll go to high schools, sometimes businesses, and I'll do some consulting on like strengths and talents, using your strengths and talents rather than using a deficit remediation or weakness fixing process. And so that's what I have to do. I have to work 4 jobs to support my family because I've got 4 kids in a unique situation with a crazy economy. Now, when the kids were 2.5 years old, my third son was then diagnosed with leukemia. And this was just like, it was crazy because we thought we went through a tough time, and then all of a sudden this one of our kids had leukemia. And about that time, we had to start all over again with the real tough times. And he's doing good now. He's been going through this chemo. He went through 9 months of chemo at the hospital. He lost his hair. He lost everything. We lost our son, basically. And during that time, I shaved my head just to sort of, unite with the kid, and decided if my son's going to work hard, I'm going to work hard. And I decided to sort of get back into shape during that time. And the one thing I had learned in the past was the Zone diet. Barry Sears, you know it?
Yeah, oh yeah, totally.
So I started using that. And it works. It does work to a certain extent. During that time, I lost, I found out that I ballooned up to about 212, 215 pounds. And it worked. I got down to about 175, and then I stalled. Mm-hmm. And then my son got better. He started getting better. Chemo was less. I started spending more time with the family. About 6, 7, 8 months later, I was back to 212, 215. And all of a sudden, I remember just very clearly looking in the mirror going, I don't even recognize that dude. I feel like I'm 36, 37, but I feel like I've been through the life of a 60-year-old man. And I wanted to make a real change. And so on June 1st of last year, I said, that's it. I'm making a change. And so just doing what I had learned, I said, I'm gonna hit the Zone. I'm gonna eat right. I'm gonna start running. I'm gonna get in the gym. And I did that. And then again, I stalled. This time I stalled at 180. And I was getting frustrated. I was like, I don't understand this. I don't know why I'm stalling. And so I got online and I started doing some research, man. I started doing some big time research. And it was during that time where I found out, and here's the thing, I think for all of us, we'll look at Hollywood, we'll look at people that we see a lot, obviously on TV, and we'll say, that's the body I want. And I think for a lot of us guys, we look at Fight Club, we look at Brad Pitt, and we say, that is the body. That's the one. And I started researching, how did he get to that? How is that possible? And, I found out that in Fight Club, he was 155 pounds at 6 foot. And I was like, what the heck? 155 pounds? That's crazy. And then there was another guy I wanted to research. His name is Joe Manganiello. Some of the guys might know him from True Blood on HBO. Mm-hmm. And this dude, he's ridiculous. He's got an incredible, incredible body. And I took headshots with this guy from New York, and he had taken a photo of Joe Manganiello that is unbelievable. And I started researching Joe Manganiello. And I remember going to a Target, and he was on the cover of Men's Health, and I picked up that Men's Health magazine, and I started reading, and he was talking about how he was 6'5", 230, 240, and he wanted to, or his trainer told him he was too bulky for, the show, and in order to look his best, he needed to slim down. And at 6'4", 6'5", and I remember this specifically, that in that article, he had to come down to 185, 190, something like that. And all his family was concerned about him losing weight and said he didn't look healthy and all that. But then I was like, this dude is 6'4", 6'5", and he's at 185, 190. I'm 6 foot and I'm 180. No wonder I'm not satisfied. But why am I stalling? I couldn't figure it out. Mm. So I kept continuing to research him online. And I found this really weird YouTube video of some skater guy doing this review of this fitness thing called Fitness Black Book, where he gets into Joe Manganiello and how he achieved that look. And I found Fitness Black Book and Rusty Moore. Mm-hmm. And I started jumping into that and looking into that. But I didn't buy anything. I didn't purchase anything. And then Rusty put out some free thing that was attached to Eat Stop Eat. And I read it, and I felt like a light went on. And I was like, holy cow, this is, I think I found what I'm looking for. But the Eat, Stop, Eat stuff then took me to Adonis. And I found Adonis, and I was like, great, they've got podcasts. And so I downloaded every single podcast, and I started from the beginning. And there was one specific podcast that you did. I can't remember exactly which one it was. It was an earlier one from 2009. I don't know if it was the How Many Calories Do You Need to Lose Weight one. It was one of those. And in that was the podcast that changed things for me. In that podcast, you said something very specific. You said the words peer-reviewed research, and a light went on. Coming from higher ed, you hear a lot about research, right? But It's different when you hear peer-reviewed research to me. You said that. You broke it down in the simplest terms possible. It's about your basal. You figure out your basal. You cut calories from there. If you want to cut a pound a week, you cut 3,500 calories a week. You can do it. You throw in Eat, Stop, Eat. It helps you manage the process. I did it, and bam, things started working completely. And I came down to the 150s. And I remember, like, in September, looking in the mirror going, holy cow, that's holy cow. Like, I could see all my abs. I was a completely different guy. I had achieved a look that I did not think was possible anymore. I mean, John, at 37, at 212 pounds, and if there's any guys out there who are still doubting or wondering, and their knees hurt like I did, I had stomach issues, hemorrhoids, whatever. Like, I felt like I was an old man. Mm-hmm. And I thought there was no way I could ever be who I was before, much less look the way I look now or look the way I looked, you know, when I first did my initial transformation. And after that, I said, that's like sort of in my head, like my psychology is like, I did this and I didn't pay for anything. Now I'm going to thank these guys by paying, you know, my $47 and getting in as a junior member. And I did it. And so then I used AI for the first time in terms of the workouts, and I just jumped right into it. Jumped right into MBF. I didn't start with the first module because I felt like I've been working so long. I jumped in with hypertrophy. And what had happened was prior to that, I had taken a break in January. I went to London for this ACT thing. And my wife and I enjoyed London, and then Make-A-Wish Foundation sent us to Florida because of what my son had been through. We did that, and keep this in mind, I was able to maintain all the way through December. It was sort of after Christmas through January, in the start of the AT7 contest, that I had come back up to 166. But this time, for the first time, I did not freak out, because I know that it's achievable. Like, I can achieve what I had done before because I know how to do it. I know the right way to do it. There's no more smoke and mirrors anymore. No more counting blocks. It is simple math, and that's it. And so I jumped into the competition. I followed the workouts as best as, like, as specifically as possible. And because it was for a contest, what I did do is I cut out some of the legs and
which program did you use for the contest?
Well, I used Muscle Building Foundations, mm-hmm. I think I started with the hypertrophy module. I did the next three modules: strength, power, and then I just worked out every day. I didn't even rest unless I just felt like I was tired. Mm-hmm. I think I did the first three sets of Rage in there as well. Finished off the contest by doing like half sets of Rage for biceps, chest, and shoulders on the last day. The coolest thing about doing AI for the first time was that I was in the gym, John, doing stuff I'd never even seen. Like, I'd never seen a tape press. Like, nobody in the gym is doing a tape press.
Oh,
like,
right, yeah.
Like, what is this? Like,
were people like, did you ever get people wondering, like, every now and then asking, hey, what is that, or what's that for, or no?
And that's the thing, like, it's funny, at the gym, like, everybody, like, stays in their silos and mm-hmm. doesn't talk to each other a lot unless I'm not, like, I'm not walking around groaning or with a frown on my face. I'm willing to talk to anybody, but I'm also working, and I'm working hard, and I'm moving mm-hmm. fast. And the thing that I've noticed the most is that after the workout, when I'm in the locker room taking my shirt off, when I'm in that 150 range, mm-hmm. dudes are looking. They're mm-hmm. pounding their protein shakes, and I'm not, but they're looking. Mm-hmm. And that is something I've noticed. And again, I don't hold it against anybody. You're doing what you think is right. And I think there's a psychological effect to that. It makes you feel good. It makes you feel like you're accomplishing something. And I was that guy. But once I found AI, those workouts, they are special. And you're mm-hmm. doing things that I felt like I was doing things that my muscles had never done before. And so what would happen is I'd work through, like, hypertrophy, for example, and I would start out completely sore because my muscles had never done anything like that before. I'd get to the end and then transition to another, you know, to transition to strength, and boom, I'd be, you know, at the end of hypertrophy, I wouldn't be as sore anymore, and then I'd start strength, and I'd be sore right off the bat because I'm using my muscles in a different way and using them in a way that I'd never done before. And
so you've never done that, like a periodized program that changes like that?
No, no. This is the first time. It was completely the first time. And again, just doing stuff I'd never done before. I hadn't even heard of some of the, you know, like I've never seen anybody doing a squat and press in a gym before. Everybody's just doing the same stuff over and over again. AI gave me something completely different.
Did you find that like a little refreshing at least? Like,
oh, unbelievably refreshing. Like I felt like for the first time I knew what I was doing. I had a goal to achieve, and I was following a program that was developed by guys who'd done peer-reviewed research. Complete faith.
So were you at any point, were you skeptical about us, or was it that hot? Like, because a lot of people think, I don't know. I don't know what they think.
No, not at all. And I'll tell you why. Because I had, like, I was searching. And by the time I got to AI, because of all the research that I'd done, I knew light was right. I did not know how to get there. That was
no,
the ticket.
Did you have a problem with the being light? Like you said, like, you were a little bit surprised finding out how light Pitt was, Brad Pitt was. But, like, did that, you know, when we do the permission to be light, like, was that a barrier for you? You didn't care?
No, but prior to figuring out that Brad Pitt was light, yeah, I was like, dudes are supposed to be big. And here's another thing I found out, like in the Rocky movies, like Rocky 3 and Rocky 4, Sylvester Stallone is cut up. In Rocky 4, he's even more cut up than he is in Rocky 3. And before each of his fights in those movies, they'll be like, Rocky Balboa weighing it, like in Rocky 3, Rocky Balboa weighing it a trim 201, right? He's 165 pounds.
Oh, in reality, oh yeah, that's just for the movie. He's not that.
Yeah,
big.
No, yeah,
he's a midget. He's only like 5'6" or something.
Yeah, he's short, but in the movie they're saying he's a trim 201. I found out his shoot weight was 165. It's another thing I found out. And I think in Rocky IV he put some more size on and he was actually 175, but they weigh him in for the movie at like 110 or something like that. And I found out prior to AI that all these dudes I thought were heavy and big are totally light. And so I gave myself permission to be light prior to finding AI because of the research I'd done. I didn't know how to get there. And AI helped me.
So you crossed that mental barrier before you even found us.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Just because I was frustrated, man. I was looking and searching, and I realized, like, it was all these dudes that I look at and go, I want that body. These guys, they're not 6 foot 190, 200. They are lighter.
I mean, we've talked about this before. I'm sure you've heard us say it in the podcast. I think the only people that big and that ripped are either pro athletes or pro bodybuilders. Or maybe some wrestlers. There is very few people on earth are over 200 pounds and ripped if they're not 6'5".
Yeah.
Like, it's just, that's an enormous human being to be, like, really, really lean. Lots of guys can be, like you and I both, we've been well over 200 pounds, but not in any shape anyone would want to look at us, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And then if we actually think we can be lean, like, six-pack lean at 215, no, or that requires massive amounts of drugs. Like, it's just, and people don't piece that together. They don't realize that that's how much lighter guys actually have to be. And like you said, even in the movies, you know, they play up the body weights and stuff, and it's just nobody's as big as we think they. It's a distortion working backwards from bodybuilders.
Absolutely,
they actually are that big, but that's pharmaceutically enhanced, and nobody else is even remotely close to being that big.
Absolutely, and on top of that, that's not the look I wanted. I'm looking like if Brad Pitt was at the top of the list in Fight Club, that's what I wanted to achieve. And the other thing I forgot to mention was that. I found out that he was like 35 or 36 when he shot Fight Club. And that was one of the things that made me go, what, if he can do it, why can't I? Why can't I get to that level of fitness as well? I just didn't know how to get there. I didn't know how to achieve it. I didn't know how it was possible.
So once you found us, there was no barriers. It was all go.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I knew, just again, I ripped through those podcasts. You were saying the things that I'd been looking for. I'd been wanting to hear. And you were breaking it down as simple as possible. You were not sugarcoating anything. And I knew I found what I was looking for. I jumped right into it. It worked right off the bat. There was no stalling. And that's it for me, John. There's not going to be any stalling anymore. If it's math and whatever you want to call it, willpower, whatever it is, then that's it. There's no stalling. Like, I'm not going to stall at 170 or 180 anymore. I know how to get that. Why would I stall when I've got to figure out a way to cut calories and just stay in the gym? working out a little bit, maybe doing a little bit of cardio is going to help a little, but if I just eat like crazy and do that, I'm never going to lose any weight. I'm never going to cut or maintain.
Yeah. Did you do cardio with this or no? With your the contest? A little bit, not much.
Yeah, barely. Like there were times where I would finish up a workout and just jump on the treadmill, walk for 30 minutes, maybe throw some 30-second intervals in there. I did it from time to time. I'd say, no more than once or twice a week, and that was it. That was all I did. And I kid you not, John. When I lost my weight when my son was going through his deal, I was working out. I was in the gym every other day, and then in between that, I was running like 5 miles, and then I'd made it up to like 10 miles. And I was out there like at midnight, because I was like, I'm going to do this. If he's working hard, I'm working hard. And I was running like 10 miles a night, 3 times a week, and I was still stalling at 180.
Oh, because you didn't have the diet side figured out.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, go ahead.
Was it just ESC, or did you use any AGD principles? Or was it just ESC and then just calories?
Yeah, well, basically when people ask me, and that was another thing we haven't talked about, the social pressure, which is one of the reasons I wanted to enter the contest was to see if I can just place and get some social support, because that's been the toughest thing. And when people ask me, what are you doing? I just sort of tell them, I start off the bat just say, listen, if God made it, I'll eat it. Or if nature made it, I'll eat it. If man made it, I just try and stay away. It's just my general rule. It's not what I do all the time. It's just a general rule. And I think there is something to be said about that, because, if I have an apple, I'm going to hit 100 calories. If I have a handful of 15 wheat thins or like 13 wheat thins, I'm going to hit 115 calories. If I go to Starbucks and I get a crumble cake, that's 450 calories. If I have an orange, that's 100 calories. If nature made it, it's just better for you. I mean, it's good for you. And so that's my general rule. Like during the week, I'm eating egg whites are fantastic and they're filling and they're great for you. I'm eating as much non-processed foods as possible during the week, but then on the weekends I just eat what I want. It doesn't matter. And I don't freak out if I gain 4 or 5, 6 pounds. It doesn't matter. I mean, it can just come off right away. Basically, I just know this. My schedule is complete. Monday, Thursday are my ESC days. That's it. I'll do ESC Monday, Thursday. I try and eat good over the course of the week. I do keep count of my calories just to know exactly what I'm doing and where the calories are going and what they're coming from and all that. Then in the weekends, I just try and enjoy myself. And look, when you've got four kids in the house, four 5-year-olds, I mean, it's all just crap food all over the place. I mean, that's it, and our kids eat healthy generally for 5-year-olds, but I mean, it's chips and candy and cookies are everywhere. And so you gotta, for especially for the older guys who have kids, it's sort of tough. And that's another thing I figured out was the difference between when I'm hungry and the difference between when my reward system is going insane. And Brad has talked a little bit about how he's been really open and honest. That's another thing I've really appreciated about the podcast is the openness and honesty. And he's talked a little bit about that, a little bit about alcohol in his emails and in the podcast and how he's just had to make a decision to just cut that from his lifestyle. And my reward system clicks on for the fat, sugar, salt combo that you've talked about in the podcast. And that's something I didn't realize either. And it was a trip. I remember you talking about in one of the podcasts how, there was some research that you had showing that rats would choose the fat, sugar, salt combo over cocaine. Am I saying that right? Is that something that sounds?
Yeah, to the same degree, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I was like, holy cow, if that makes sense to me, because a lot of guys have talked about, they've been on the podcast and they've talked about the binge. And it makes sense to me now because I've been through that process, that process where you just want to binge. And then I realized I've never been like, oh my gosh, I just want to kill 10 apples. Oh my gosh, all I want to do is just pound chicken. It's never happened before.
No.
What happens
with chicken wings and pizza and chips and ice cream and all that sort of stuff.
Exactly. And so I now can tell the difference between when I'm hungry and I eat when I'm hungry. But if my reward system's on, that's the difference. And if my reward system is on, like, it really turns on after I've had dinner with the kids, and all of a sudden they're like, I hear the crunching, and it creates a physical response, man. Like, it does. It creates a physical response, and I've got to reset my system. And I figured out the best way to reset my system to get to calm down my reward system is I get to the gym, A, or go to sleep, B. That's it. That's what you do.
Was that, like, your major challenge throughout this? Is that specific?
That is, like, the basic challenge. That was the main challenge.
That was, like, kind of the omnipresent one throughout the whole process?
Absolutely. That is the main one, and it's and I know, like, and I'm empowered now because I know that that's the tough part. And I've put in sort of markers to help me through that process. So when dessert comes out for the kids, or when they're eating, you know, their chips or fries or whatever it is during dinner, I'll eat well. I'll drink a lot of water. I'll hit some coffee afterwards. If my reward system is kicking on, one of the things through some of the other former contest winners I've learned was getting some of those sugar-free candies, Lifesavers or Weathers Originals or whatever. I'll use those. If it's still not off, I will, you know, maybe hit a diet Dr. Pepper or something like that, and then just find a way to make it to 9 or 10 o'clock, and that's when I get to the gym. Because already my schedule is so insane, holding down four different careers, giving my family the time they deserve and need. And the gym is always crowded prior to 8 o'clock. I always hit the gym at about 9 or 10 o'clock or during lunchtime, or sometimes both. If my reward system is too high and I've already worked out that day, 9 or 10 o'clock, if it's on, I will get to the gym and I will work it out of my system. By the time I get home, I'm good to go. I'm fine. It's not on anymore.
That's interesting. So you can, as long as you get yourself to the gym and get through any kind of workout, you can kind of put it to rest.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just the way I see it for myself is just resetting my system. Just reset the system and going to sleep and waking up the next morning, boom, it's off. And if I go to the gym and get a good workout in, get it out of my system, again, it's off. And I'm okay.
Yeah, and that's good that you brought all that up and that you had to put those sort of guiding your future self checks and balances in, because the process is not smooth. Like, it's literally a daily challenge, and anyone who hasn't gone through this, anyone who's gone through it totally knows, and anyone who hasn't gone through it yet or just wants to do a transformation, yeah, you've got to do these little tricks, like, to guide yourself, because it's just too easy. It's just too easy to break down. You have to have these little mental rituals where you're like, okay, you know what? I know right now I'm going to crack if I don't leave. I'm going to the gym or just whatever. And you know, that's just what you did. I kind of do some of the same things, but you got to have those in place. Otherwise, if you want to make a change in your body, your lifestyle obviously has to change. Otherwise, your body will look like how it looked.
Absolutely.
Before your lifestyle change.
And the other thing is this, is that with those kinds of foods, like, I don't need to cut them out completely. I just need to know when I'm going to eat them. And I know between Monday and Thursday specifically, or Sunday and Thursday specifically, these are the days when I'm at work. And oftentimes guys will talk about how stressed they are, how difficult things are, how crazy work is. Honestly, John, the crazier work is, the easier it is to eat right. You're not distracted. You're not sitting in front of all kinds of foods that are tempting you. You can focus more. Like, you're focused on getting your work done or doing whatever it is that you're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're not tempted. You're focused somewhere else.
A lot of people eat just from boredom.
Yeah.
It's just, they got nothing else super exciting. Yeah, they're at work, but it's like, they're not going to fire me if I don't get much done today. So whatever, I'll just entertain myself with some food. Like,
yeah.
It's just, I think that's one of the, like, besides other eating issues, that's boredom eating is a major, it's a major one. Like, I know for me, that's probably the one thing I eat when I'm, you know, when I'm just, when otherwise not totally, like, stimulated by either something, like, there's people in the room or we're doing something or I'm going somewhere or on the phone or something, when it's just really quiet and I'm maybe just driving somewhere, I'm like, I kind of feel like eating. And I know it's boredom eating.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, the other thing is if it's around you, man, I mean, that was the toughest thing. I mean, the toughest thing for me, especially going, actually, a big portion of the contest coming into the last month, it was just event after event after event where I just couldn't get out of these events where I'd have to go. And, like, when you go to events, and I mean, everything is around food. It's always around food.
Oh yeah, all social celebrations are food based.
It's all food based, and you rarely have good choices to make. It's always pasta and pizza. Like, you know, my supervisor had us do this required Thursday meeting where he'd feed us, and it was just pizza every time. And Pizza's fine, man. Pizza's not a problem. I ate virtually anything I wanted to eat over the course of my transformation. I just kept it to the weekends. That's what I did. And I knew when I was going to eat it. And so when you go into a variety of different events and it's all over the place all the time, it's very, very difficult. And especially just for me specifically, because that's what that combo hits my reward system. It's difficult to stop once I get in there. And so that becomes the challenge for me. But now, because I know what my challenges are, I'm not concerned about maintenance. It's not a concern anymore. I know how to maintain. I know what my Mondays and Thursdays look like with Eat, Stop, Eat. And I look forward to it. I totally look forward to it. Let's get in that.
What are your goals now?
Basically, I haven't taken my shirt off for anybody other than my wife and my brother-in-law who took the pictures. Nobody's seen me this way. And that's something that the social pressure piece has been the biggest challenge, like the biggest piece that we haven't talked about yet, but the social pressure piece has been ridiculous. It's been absolutely ridiculous. My goals now are to sort of take it to the next level of leanness. I think I can get leaner. And some guys might be going, well, 6 foot, 147.5. Yeah, that's after a water deplete. All right. Like, in fact, I woke up the morning that I took my pictures. I took my pictures at 8 o'clock at night that night, the Saturday night before the contest. Saturday morning, I woke up at 150.5. By the time I took my pictures, I was 147.5, which is one of the questions I wanted to ask you. Like, how does that even work? I don't even know how that happens, but I weighed myself that morning. What's
that?
You
can go up and down. You can go up and down 5 to 10 pounds of water, no problem.
Mm.
Easy. Some guys that use drugs, they go up and down like 20 pounds because they're holding that much more water.
Yeah.
So I think most people don't get how much water, A, the body has, and B, how quickly it can go up and down.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I was just surprised. I was like, okay, I'm in the middle of this water deplete towards the end of it, and I woke up at 150.5, and then by picture time, I was 147.5. But I've just got this thing, like, you know, you've talked about how everybody's got their sort of genetic limitations or genetic challenges. I just happen to have wide hips. My whole family, you know, on dad's side of the family, we've got these sort of wide hips, and I always get jealous, dude. I go into the gym and I'll see these guys with these narrow hips, these sort of narrow hips that they almost have a natural V taper, even if they're not as lean as they could be. And I have these wide hips. And so, I know that I can, what I'd like to do is I do want to do the open next. The reason I want to do the open next is to keep myself accountable. It helps keep me accountable. And this will be the first time I will look this way going through a summer.
And, oh, I see. Yeah.
Yeah. And so why not? Why not just do the open to keep myself accountable and go through the summer this way? Now, the social pressure thing, I don't know if you want to, did you want to get into this at all?
Yeah, let's cover that, and then okay. we'll close off as your final
okay.
comments.
I did my transformation in front of, basically, I started off at 212 pounds, and basically, like, three of the careers that I juggle are in front of people. Mm-hmm. One of those, where I do the announcements for my church job, I do the announcements in front of, like, 1,200 people every weekend. They all saw me go from 212 pounds to 150 pounds. In a stretch of 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
People freaked out. And they didn't come up and tell me, dude, you look awesome. Dude, you look amazing. What are you doing? I don't want to know what you're doing. It wasn't that. It was, are you ill? Are you sick? Is something wrong? What's wrong with you? What, like, you're too thin, right?
Mm-hmm.
The day before the contest on Good Friday, somebody came up to me, and this is a person I really, like, I value and I really like. She came up to me and she goes, why are you so emaciated? That's the day before the contest. And she called me emaciated. And you know, her and she's a really great person. And it's not her, like, I get it now. It's not her fault. Like, it's not, she doesn't understand. She doesn't know what I'm doing. And she hasn't seen me without my shirt off. Mm-hmm. Well, her son, you know, he's a college student. He's a great guy. He's asked me about stuff before. And after I took my pictures, I put some of them on my phone, and I came up to him, and I feel bad about my response to her, because she's like this mother. I said, well, you know, you haven't seen me without my shirt off, and then she was a little bit taken off, and I was like, oh, crap, I shouldn't have said that to her. That was probably inappropriate. I felt bad about it. So I came to her son. I said, hey, man, do I owe your mom an apology? I feel really bad. He's like, no, you don't owe her an apology. She was feeling bad about what she said to you. She thought she may have hurt your feelings or something. And I said, no, it's just nobody's called me emaciated before. I wasn't expecting that. And then I said, here, let me show you something. And I showed him one of my pictures, and he just paused and said, dude, that's sick. And he goes, what? I don't mean you to look sick. I mean, that's ridiculous. You look ridiculous. And I said, yeah, man, I'm not emaciated. And he goes, no, you are definitely not emaciated. Mm-hmm. But I have not heard through this process, nobody's come up to me and said a good thing. As a result, I just don't talk about it. And I think that's something very valuable I've learned through the acting thing as well. Like when I have auditions, I don't tell people. Even when I book a job, I don't tell people. I don't say anything. And from that process, I learned through this AI process, through this process, that people generally, like, if you talk about yourself and if you want, you're doing it for the attention from people, it's just not going to work out because you're not doing it for yourself. You're not doing it from something inside you that wants to come out. You're doing it for reasons other than that. Mm-hmm. And especially with weight loss, people are sensitive. They're totally sensitive. And oftentimes when people have to lose weight and they see someone else doing it, they don't respond well. And so when people would ask me, I just tell them, look, I just try and eat well, and I just get in the gym as much as possible. And always is like, how much ephedrine are you taking? What are you, are you starving yourself? Are you, no. It's none of that. And I wouldn't even get into it because the response was so negative right off the bat. And how do you explain this? Like, nobody could have explained it to me prior to finding it. I had to find it myself, and I wanted to find it, and that's why I found it, and now I understand. It's tough with people who don't understand, and so, with the acting thing and with the AI thing, I need to stay as humble as possible, stay as cool as possible, stay as chill as possible, and maybe at some point my shirt will come off in front of people and people will see me differently. Until that time, it's okay. Like, I get it. People are going through their process. A lot of people are oftentimes insecure about the weight loss thing. On Facebook, people will get on all the time and say, I just started Weight Watchers and I've lost 13 pounds. And within a month, they stop posting. And I just know right off the bat, they're rebounding.
They're done. Yeah. You know what's funny is your entire story, it just made me think of an alternate reality where we didn't wear clothes, or at least didn't wear, like, well, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Guys were just, like, everyone was in, like, girls were in bikinis and guys were just in, like, you know, shorts. No one would. Everyone's reaction would be different. People are like, "Oh man, he's in shape," and then everyone else, you know, who's not, they would look around the room and be like, instead of saying, "You look emaciated," be like, they would look at you and go, "Oh, okay, so he's the one person in this room who's in really good shape."
Yeah,
like the entire story would change. But
absolutely.
Since we're sort of, you know, hiding behind our clothes, so to speak, you know, publicly, there is none of that. Your answer was right, although socially a little bit awkward. It'd be like, well, you haven't seen me under my shirt.
It was bad.
And I know that's actually the right answer, but it's not like, you know, like it's just
it wasn't appropriate, John. And then the thing is, I think by that point, especially like, I mean, John, it's every Sunday, 10 to a dozen people will come up to me and say something negative about.
You know what's crazy, and I know this has happened. If you were just so the shape you're in now, if that's how they met you, no one would have ever said you look emaciated. They'd
just
be like, oh, that's just what he looks like. Oh, Phil? Oh yeah, the lean guy, right? Him? Yeah. But when you make a change, all of a sudden it's bad. But if that's how you always looked, it's just, well, that's how he looks.
For sure.
Yeah, and that's the catch of it all. It's the process.
For
That throws people off. All right, well, we're getting on, Dan. So give me your concluding remarks, advice for other guys who want to make a change. Obviously, I mean, Christ, your opening story, I was like, it almost made the rest of this pointless. Where would you say to somebody else who's as busy as you are and still wants to make a change and seems like their life is too stressful. Like, I don't know. Look, you got the floor.
John, I totally know that I have perspective. There's people in the world that have it worse than me. And there's some people in the world that all they get is they just wake up, they starve, and they die, and that's all they get. That's what they got out of life. So I recognize there's people that have it worse than me. And there's people that have it easier than me. But when it comes to this, when it comes to trying to achieve the body that you want, it's more than that. It's achieving a lifestyle and a perspective on life that you want. If I can do it with the craziness of my life and the kids and the cancer and all the stuff that's happening with me and all the juggling of the careers, if I can do it, there's somebody out there listening who can do it. End of subject. You can do it. You can do it. Just listen to the podcast, listen to John and Brad, implement the processes, figure out how your body responds to different stuff, different foods, different workouts, and do it. Just do it. And the way you see yourself will be a remarkable shift in your, it will give you a remarkable shift in your worldview. It really will. And again, this is not coming from somebody who's had his shirt off. I have not had my shirt off in front of people. The only people that have seen those pictures are anybody in the AI community, my wife, my brother-in-law, and the kid, the college student. And then actually, I forgot to tell you this, I forwarded one of my pics to my agent.
Oh, good.
And I said, could you use this? And he responded saying, damn, dude, you're freaking ripped. Put that up so I can use it. So my hope is also, one of my goals is also, is that I've rebranded myself in Hollywood and will be able to go out for different roles rather than playing terrorists who get shot all the time. I probably
yeah.
So.
Well, you'll be the terrorist that gets shot with your shirt off now.
Exactly.
Yeah, for sure.
Exactly.
Well, oh, yeah, and by the way, now the rest of the world can, as of recording this, everyone in who has access to an internet can now see it too.
Yeah, that's fine.
So, all right. Well, I mean, I guess just do it. That's the takeaway message here, I think.
Absolutely.
I don't know that we can really improve on that. All right, Phil. So that was a great interview. Thanks for being on. Congratulations on winning first. So for Phil Shabazz, I'm John Barbin, and that's your Donis Index podcast.